Welcome to Local Talk Wednesday on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area in central Iowa. Your hosts for today are Gina McAndrews and I, Susan Franson. To celebrate International Women's Day, Iowa History Month, and St. Patrick's Day, this year we are featuring the story of the best-known Irish girl in Iowa history, Kate Shelley. We started our exploration in the fall of 2014, and then Gina had to go out of town.
To Local Talk, Gina.
Hello, Susan. Hey, I'm really glad to be back with you again. I know a year ago we set out to explore the legend of Kate Shelley, and then I had to go out of town for a few meetings, but I'm ready to get back to it.
I'd like to pick up where we left off, that when you had to leave, I explored the many written materials and songs about Kate Shelley, the girl who saved the train. But I really missed you, because there was so much more to do by literally walking in the footsteps of Kate Shelley.
Now, what exactly do you mean by that?
Well, let's do a road trip and I'll show you.
But first, why don't we review the visit we made last year at the Boone County Historical Center to hear Misty McNally, who was writing a book on Kate Shelley.
I'd like to play a clip from last year's program, complete with sound effects. This is probably the place to clarify the location of the Kate Shelley High Bridge, which inspired Misty. Actually, it's one of two Kate Shelley High Bridges in Boone, one built in 1901 and the other about 100 years later. But the bridge that Kate Shelley crawled across in 1881 was much farther down the river in Moingona. So bear that in mind as you hear the following.
The thrill for me, it was seeing the Kate Shelley Bridge. And I remember that when they first told me the story, I could not believe that a bridge was named after a girl. Probably the biggest thing I had ever seen that was man-made. Then my grandma would tell me that Kate Shelley was this teenage girl and she crossed a bridge at night in a storm to save a passenger train from going into a wreck. And I just thought that was amazing. I thought that was a great story. And, you know, is it true, Grandma? Is it true? And yes, it's true. It's true.
But in her talk, Misty admitted that the story was a lot more complicated than that. We decided that we needed an accurate as well as dramatic account of what really happened on the night when that terrible storm and flood washed out a bridge on Honey Creek.
Thanks to the archives at the Boone County Historical Center, we have such an account in the words of Kate Shelley herself. This is how she described the night. It was as dark as midnight, and then, down in sheets, came the waters of that appalling storm. We watched it until fright took possession of us, until it drove us from the windows through which the lightning flashed dreadful pictures of destruction. There was no house near, and if we were to have help, we must furnish it ourselves. We sat and watched the storm, looking for it to finish, and at a late hour began to tremble for the trains when the engine passed to the west. Mother assured me that no train would be dispatched in such a storm, and so we hoped and prayed. Honey Creek was loaded with all kinds of burdens, picket fences, lumber, trees, and stumps, along with the rubbish swept down and heaped against the pilings of the bridge. The storm had raged from 6 o'clock to 11 p.m., when, in a lull, the rumble of a train was heard crossing the long bridge, slowly pulling out, going east. It was the pusher, obeying an order to cross and go to Boone. Run to Boone and return to Moingona, regardless of all trains. W.P. Ward. The engine was backing over the road, the brakeman and the section foreman standing on the running board behind the tender, keeping a lookout, as we learned afterward, and signaling the engineer. The fireman, named Olmsted, climbed out from the cab over the coal, saying, as he came back, "Make room for me, boys!" I heard the bell toll twice, distinctly, as she swayed on the uprooted bridge, And then came the horrible crash and the fierce hissing of the steam as tender an engine went down in 25 feet of water told the nature of the fate that had overtaken them. The shock seemed to shake the earth. "Oh, Mother," I said, "it is number 11. They've gone down Honey Creek Bridge." It seemed as still as death, as silent as the grave. The storm and all else was forgotten. And I said that I must go to help the men and to stop the passenger train that would soon be at Moingona, the midnight train from the west. Remonstrances were of no avail. I felt I had to go. I believe that God makes strong the weakest and makes the poorest of us able to endure much for his merciful purposes. When they found that I was not to be dissuaded, Mother said, "Go, then, in the name of God, and do what you can." I had an old skirt and jacket. I caught up an old straw hat, improvised a light by hanging a little miner's lamp in the frame of an old lantern. I filled the little lamp for the wick. I used a strip of flannel from an old shirt and started out into the night and the storm to do what I could and what I thought was my duty, knowing that Mother and the children were praying God to keep me from harm. The entire valley, from which our doorway is like the inside of a huge oval chopping bowl, was full of water, rushing and swelling through the breach and covering the track. I went around the bluff in a semicircle behind and to the south of our house until I reached where the turn of road finds the cut in the spur of the bluffs, and then ran east along the track back to the broken bridge. As I came down the track, the lightning lit up the awful scene. Wood, the engineer, seeing me by the vivid lightning flashes, or catching the gleam of the lantern in the thick darkness, called out to me. He was caught by a branch after being swept from the cab and was safe in a tree in the midst of the swelling flood. His brakeman, Agar, was fortunate also in catching to a tree or a willow, but the other two of his hapless companions were lost, and only one of them was found, O'Donohue, the section man. He called to me again and again, but neither one of us could understand what the other said for the raging of the elements, and I turned toward Moingona, lying across and west of the great bridge. Hardly had I passed where now is the cottage of the old watchman when my feeble little lamp went out, and I was all alone. Only in the flashes of lightning could I now see the structure before me and the path I had to take to cross it. Those who cross a railroad bridge on a swiftly moving train can form no conception of the sensation of it that a traveler experiences who attempts to cross on foot a long and unprotected stretch of bridge timbers. 500 feet of bridging lay before me, and a misstep would send me down below the ties into the flood that was boiling below. The Des Moines River, into which the hundreds of streams in its watershed had been pouring all that evening and night, each one swollen like Honey Creek, was a furious flood that had pushed all bounds and covered all the lands about that were lower than the village, and was now straining hard at the bridge. The thunder and lightning were incessant. Fortunately for me, the downpour of rain had slackened somewhat, but the wind had come up and was blowing a gale, which made the passage still more perilous. I got down upon my hands and knees, carrying yet my useless lantern on my arm, and guiding myself by the stretch of rail. I began the weary passage of the bridge. I do not know how long I was in crossing, but it seemed an age. Halfway over, a piercing flash of lightning showed me the angry flood more clearly than ever, and swept along upon it a great tree. The earth still hanging to its roots was racing for the bridge, and it seemed for the very spot I stood upon. Fear brought me upright to my knees. I clasped my hands in terror and in prayer, I hope, lest the shock should carry out the bridge. But the monster darted under the bridge with a sweeping rush, and his branches scattered foam and water over me as he passed. Finding that I was yet unharmed, I resumed my painful and laborious mode of progression, and at length, I know not at what length, reached the solid ground, and then for a moment I stopped to breathe and straightened up for the run to the station, something more than an eighth of a mile distant. It was getting late, and how I told the tale, it would be hard to say, but I remember someone said, "The girl is crazy." I think it must have been the operator who said it. "The girl must have lost her mind." As I told of the loss of number 11 and her unhappy crew. But Mr. McIntyre said, "My God, that's Kate Shelley. That's Kate Shelley." And they were soon able to realize the dreadful burden of my errand. The pusher that helped up the hill to Ogden was in the yard. Her screams soon brought the whole town around us. Everyone seemed to be up and about, and a body of men with ropes and material made ready to go over the bridge. They took me along with them to the scene of the disaster, and I led them around the face of the bluff as I had come, crossing the tracks above the house and coming down along the track on the eastern side of the washout, where alone help could be offered to the suffering survivors of the wreck. There was nothing possible for their relief before daybreak, when at last, by great patience and after many efforts, a rope was cast to wood, which he made fast to his tree, and then he came in hand over hand to his rescuers. Agar was taken off his refuge as soon as the water went down. Both men were much exhausted by their imprisonment of 5 hours.
July 6, 1881, a fierce storm was raging. The rain just wouldn't stop coming down. The river and creeks were flooding in the Des Moines River Valley near the railroad station by Mondona Town. Around 11 in the evening, a pusher train went out to search for men looking for washouts along the track. Past the Shelley family home, a mighty crash the Shelleys heard. The Honey Creek Bridge had just collapsed. 15-year-old Kate Shelley ran outside into the storm, saw two men trapped down in that river grave. She couldn't rescue them herself, but knew that midnight train would be soon a-coming down the tracks this way. 100 years from now, folks will still speak her name. Kate Shelley will always be that girl who saved the train.
Those were two pretty impressive versions of the story, but here in Central Iowa, we can go beyond that. We can go to the spot and literally walk in Kate Shelley's footsteps. Not crossing the bridge, of course. The bridge at Mongona has been gone for years. But the Boone County Historical Center has a museum exhibit that we must see before we begin. The person to tell us about that is Charles Irwin, who was the director of the museum when the exhibit was put up. He's now teaching history at Des Moines Area Community College, DMAC, in Boone. But we called him at his office to ask him some questions. Hello, Charles. Thanks for speaking with me today.
Hello.
Let's start with a brief explanation of what the exhibit shows and what its purpose is. And what is that dramatic thing in the middle of the room?
Well, certainly one of the great stories that we like to share here in Boone is the story of Kate Shelley. And one of the things we wanted to do was to really place the Kate Shelley story in the backdrop of Boone history and Iowa history as well, and kind of show how it tied into the floods that happened in Boone that year, because 1881 was actually one of the wettest years on record here in Iowa. We wanted to set it into the backdrop of that, as well as talked about Kate Shelley, the incident, as well as what happened to her later in life. But one of the things we really wanted to give people was the experience of being Kate Shelley and walking in her footsteps. So the feature point of the exhibit is a recreation of the bridge that Kate Shelley would have crawled across. So in the center of the room, you walk in, you see this recreation of the bridge as it would have looked like. And then it actually has water on the floor and the tides. So it gives the idea of what it would have been like when Kate Shelley would have had to crawl across the bridge on her hands and knees and drag herself from one tide to the next tide, being careful not to fall through the tides because Kate Shelley could not swim. So it was very important for her to maintain her balance on the bridge. So that was very important for us to give that impression to the visitors coming to the museum.
Wow. That sounds like an exciting exhibit. Now, what was happening in Boone that night?
So the incident would have happened on July 6, 1881. So in July, a lot of times how we'll have these huge thunderstorms come through Central Iowa, and this is what happened during that night, where we're going to see an upwards of probably 7, 8, 9, 10 inches of rain all at once. You can well imagine what happens to that. And of course, at this time period, they would not have been the drainage system that we have today. So all that water would have pulled in all the low spots. So there's a lot of areas that would have suffered a tremendous amount of flooding. At this point, Honey Creek would have been open in Boone, and a lot of the bridges would have been washed out as well within the city of Boone because the railroad would have followed Honey Creek as it goes down because it would have made a natural line for the railroad to follow. But unfortunately, it had to keep crossing Honey Creek again and again as the Honey Creek would meander.
Now, I'm wondering why the railroad sent out the pusher engines, and what were pusher engines anyway?
So the pusher engines would have been the engines that would have been stationed down in Mongo, and at least several of them would have been stationed down there generally on a regular basis. And they would have been used to push up the heavy steam engines up the Des Moines River Valley. They were helped to push up at all to check the bridges. So one heading towards Ogden, one heading towards Boone. And we talked about there was a lot of bridges between. There was in upwards of 50, 60 bridges between Boone and Ogden, which would be about 10, 15 miles of track. So they had to send out one heading towards Ogden, and they got to one of the bridges, and then the train crewman actually fell through the bridge, his head and drowned, then the engine came back. And then the other one heading towards the east, towards Boone, ended up crashing through the Honey Creek Bridge. It was kind of the focal point of the Kate Shelley story when she had to go down there and tell the men that she was going to go and get help. You know, I guess the rationale behind it was the railroad wanted to know what was going on with their bridge and what was happening during that time period would probably be the best explanation.
And they really weren't thinking much about the safety of the crew, right?
There seems to be some indication, yes, that some of the residents of the area around Mongoan area certainly felt that way because there were a lot of hard feelings towards the railroad after the incident.
But the railroad did acknowledge her as a hero immediately and gave her some things that she was probably very appreciative to get. What were those?
As you mentioned, that the railroad was certainly wanted to recognize Kate Shelley for her act of heroism, and that to begin with, that the railroad gave her some money. They also gave her a train car full of coal, and they also they recognized her at a railroad meeting that fall. That was meeting in Cedar Rapids. Actually, a lot of the railroad was also involved in helping to fundraise for as well as the community was as well. There are a lot of accounts in the newspaper talking about how there was a Kate Shelley Fund. The railroad also presented her with a lifetime pass on the railroad. But the really cool thing about the pass was it would stop at her house to pick her up and let her off. They also had a lot of the union chapters around the United States would be named after Kate Shelley. They also had a train car that was named in her honor. And, of course, later on when they built the high bridge, so they no longer needed to go that Honey Creek route and go directly west out of Boone over the high bridge, that was named in her honor as well. I think the one thing, though, that there are very few historical accounts of young ladies doing historical things. That's not that they didn't do them. In many cases, they just weren't recorded. And I think that's why one of the reasons why the story is so popular and continues to be so popular, because it is of a young lady doing a very heroic deed. I think another part of it, too, is it's a very uplifting story about somebody self-sacrificing, somebody doing something good for other people, and really trying to basically risk their own life in order to help other people. So it certainly would be what most people would consider to be a definition of a hero.
I noticed that Kate's father had been a section man before he died in 1878, and that one of the men on engine number 11 was a section man. What was the job of a section man, and what was the job of Kate's father? He was a foreman, I understand.
So foreman would indicate that he was in charge of several men. Their men worked for them, and their job was to go out and to check and to make sure all these bridges, again, there was 20-some bridges between Buna and Mongona, and they would be in charge of repairing these bridges to make sure that they were safe, as well as the tracks. So they'd go out every day and inspect, repair, and maintain all those bridges.
So if her father were still alive, would he have been on that train on that night?
It certainly appears he would have been, because, again, since the person that was in his position was on the train, all appearances would be that he would have been on the train as well that night.
Thank you very much, Charles. It's been very interesting. And you've really set the scene for the dark and stormy night.
Yeah, it was. It's a great story.
I took Charles Irwin's invitation to walk in the footsteps of Kate Shelley. That's what inspired this road trip. But it was a good thing that I recorded his description of the Kate Shelley exhibit at the Boone County Historical Center last year, because it has been changed now. But the chance to walk in Kate Shelley's footsteps outside is better than ever. This year, we have the opportunity to visit the site of her home, of the bridge at Honey Creek, where the pusher train went through, and the bridge at Moingona that she crawled across. Neither of these bridges are still there, but the limestone pilings and the abutments are there, so you can get an idea of their size, and you can see, even now, with the river at a fairly low level, just how daunting it must have been to see that creek and that river in flood stage. And we have the opportunity to visit the site of her home, of the bridge on Honey Creek where the pusher train broke through, and the bridge at Mongona that she crawled across. Neither of those bridges are still there, but the limestone pilings and abutments are there, so you can get an idea of their size and just how wide Honey Creek and the Des Moines River are down at Mongona, even today.
That sounds great. Come on, let's get in the car and head west. What's the best way to get there?
Just head west along Highway 30 past Boone and drive straight to the turnoff for the Enchanted Valley Tree Farm on the left side of the road, just before the bridge over the Des Moines River.
What's at the Enchanted Valley Tree Farm?
It's part of the Kate Shelley Farm, and Joe Reuter, the present owner of this land, has offered to show us what's known as the Shelley Valley on Honey Creek, and then to give us a tour of his property, which is on the hilly part of the Shelley Farm.
Here's the sign to Enchanted Valley Tree Farm, so I'll turn left here.
Joe Reuter said his road was a mile and a quarter south of the highway on Montana Road. There's the sign saying Kate Shelley Farm, by that hilly land on the right. On the left, there's a golf course. I've heard of the Honey Creek Golf Course, so that must be it.
Here's the turnoff to Joe Reuter's tree farm.
Yeah, this is the place all right, and there's Joe in his red truck. He's talking on his cell phone. He says he's talking to Misty McNally, the woman who is writing the book about Kate Shelley, the one we heard earlier. I'd like to talk to her, Joe. She says she's finding out a lot of new things about how the Shelleys lived. But this is real news to me.
Well, I think that their intention was that when they moved there, the Des Moines River Valley was a coal region. It was also a prominent timber region. And because the railroad was expanding and the population was expanding, I think they expected to make quite a bit of money from both coal and timber. They could support themselves as well, for food with the small plot of land they had. And, of course, their aspirations might not have been terribly high, because they were leaving such a horribly impoverished area in Ireland that anything that they owned was more than they had in Ireland. So they were tenant farmers in Ireland and owned nothing. Coming here and owning a piece of land in itself was great wealth and great hope, and I think that was part of it.
They obviously never did develop that land for either mining or lumber.
Well, they did have a coal mine directly across the road from them, and in fact, Michael Shelley, Kate Shelley's father, did want to sell some land for coal. But just as the idea was coming about was when the decline of the railway that went through Mongona, you know, was declining in popularity as Boone to the north was increasing in popularity, so they were going to straighten the route. And then also coal in Iowa was not as important as coal out west. So the coal in Iowa declined in importance, and it just never ended up being something that happened. Michael Shelley also died in 1878, and I think the family's aspirations were simplified greatly at that time because of his death. They couldn't do much more to maintain.
That really interested me because I've started to follow the story of coal mining here in central Iowa. When Paul Wearson and I visited the Coal Museum in Madrid recently, I learned just how many coal mines there were along the Des Moines River. But I never guessed the Shelleys aspired to make their fortune in coal.
That's interesting. But, hey, Joe's ready to take us to the access for the Honey Creek Bridge Trail. For anyone listening who'd like to make this trip, you just continue along Montana Road as it curves, and you'll find a wide spot made by the trucks and cars pulling off at the side of the road. It's an informal-looking parking lot.
The road we've been riding on, you say, was the railroad right-of-way, so the tracks
would have run right through here.
Okay.
You can even find cinders in here, too.
Really?
Yeah, we may find some as we get closer to the bridge.
Okay, and so now we're going to turn, though.
That's right.
And follow where the tracks would have been.
That's
Is that right.
Right. Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Watch the mud.
But right now, this says Wildlife Management Area Public Hunting. Is that's the sign that leads to the bridge?
Yeah.
I mean, to the former bridge. There's no. Is there a bridge there now?
Just abutments. The abutments are still there. Stone or limestone abutments, but they're. I don't think they're the abutments from the bridge that washed out. So your tracks have been running right along here.
This is a little bit of a ridge. We have a pretty steep drop off on both sides. Had the railroad built this up, or was this just a natural ridge?
This was built up by the railroad, and we may be able to see some cinders here too.
When was the railroad abandoned down here?
In the 1930s sometime. I don't know, have an exact date. And what's interesting, if you go out here during the fall, late fall, with the modern trains running, you can hear what sounds like a diesel locomotive coming right along this right away. And that must have really been interesting in the 1930s when the steam locomotives were still running.
You mean it's like a ghost train?
That's right. You know, that's one of the legends down here, the ghost train.
Oh, I found a version of that legend in a poem written by McKinley Cantor that they had in the Boone County Historical Center. It was written in the 1930s. That must have been just about the time they took out the tracks over here. I recorded it with Irish harp. Let me play it for you. The rails that run by Honey Creek are eaten up with rust, and no one walks the greasy bed hid in the roses' dust. But yet, at night, a slender ghost may stalk the quiet sky, and bats will shiver as they see Kate Shelley going by. Kate Shelley from a quiet house, Kate Shelley in the storm. She took a lantern in her hand to keep her spirit warm. The clouds came up and thundered haste, and Honey Creek was foam. The waters laughed with blackened breath below Kate Shelley's home. O daughter, go you to the door, I hear a whistle call, crying within the valley dark that shadows over all. Your father was a section man, you were the seed he sowed. So listen, listen in the storm, and guard the iron road. Her father was a section man. She knew the mighty wheels that ground along the bottomland amid the tempest's heels. She listened in the howling dark and heard a sundered scream when 90 tons of steel went down into the boiling stream. My father was a section man. He reared me for the road. She climbed the gashed and sullen grade while oaken saplings bowed. She prayed to gods of spade and pick. She prayed to tie and rail. The river bridge was like a priest in rainy vestments pale. The midnight coaches from the west plunged in the dripping rain. West of Moingona, the ties were sound. East was a broken train. East, in the bile of Honey Creek, in one drowned twisted curl, lay 90 tons of twisted steel. Between them was a girl. Under the river bridge was death, black fathoms frothing down. Beyond Moingona sang the train, onto a lonely town. The engineer swayed in his cab. He could not see ahead. 2 hours more, I'll leave the run and get me home to bed. 2 hours more, the whistle whined shrill in the driven rain. 2 hours more, a broken span, a ghost where there was a train. Across the river bridge, a girl came creeping on the ties. The wind wiped out her lantern flame, but still she had her eyes. And still she had her Irish soul, and still she had her heart. The spikes cut furrows in her skin and tore her flesh apart. 2 yards beneath, the river's tongue clove at the spiking span. A wraith beside her urged her on. Ollie was a section man. Down in a pocket of the hills, Moingona hid its head, and met with muscles pillowed down, slumbering as the dead. One light shone thinly through the night, under the battle din. A bleeding hand clutched the door, a torn shape staggered in. No song of thanks, no valiant yell, God, the train is saved. Nothing but brandy held to lips by someone of the crew. I'll ride the cabs, she cried, and show just where the boys went through. She rode the cab and guided them, the anxious whistle bawled. She rode in torn and bloody rags the ties where she had crawled. And if the station mice were there, they saw the sundered heap and watched the rescue party toil before Kate went to sleep. And 49 years are gone, the trains no longer come. Along the crest of Honey Creek before Kate Shelley's home. Oh, there were songs for other years when all the road was hers, and there were men to bless her name and gold to fill her purse. But if you go to Honey Creek in some dark summer storm, be sure you take a lantern flame to keep your spirit warm. For there will be a phantom train and foggy whistle cries, and in the lightning flare, you'll see Kate Shelley on the ties. That water down there, is that the...
Honey Creek.
That's Honey Creek.
That is Honey Creek, yes.
Okay, so that's built. That isn't a natural cliff.
No,
that's
no.
Built.
This is built from limestone blocks.
And so the original Honey Creek Ridge was a pretty big span.
Oh, it was, yeah. It was around 600 feet long, several multiple spans, but the length, this one would be a lot shorter, I suppose. What's that distance? I don't know, what, 60, 70 feet, maybe more, something like that.
Wow.
And these abutments would have been a replacement bridge because the one that washed out was probably a different design.
And probably that's why it washed out.
Yes,
it wasn't so substantial.
Right, yeah. I'm sure these bridges were built in a hurry when the railroad came through because they were trying to get the tracks down.
And, of course, they had a lot of bridges to build.
That's
between
right.
Here and Boone.
That's right, yeah. Honey Valley, the reason was apparently the Native Americans would come down here and get honey every year.
Oh, really?
That's where the name honey comes from. So,
do they still have bees? Do they still have hives?
My son had gotten stung by some.
So this is the Shelley Valley that we're standing
in. There you go. You could actually walk across there if you had boots
even,
on.
Even now.
Yeah,
and,
you could.
And when
you
it's
could.
Drier, I imagine you wouldn't
oh,
even
yes,
need
really.
Boots.
It's kind of nice, actually, to get out there in your bare feet as there's springs coming up, the you know, really hot day.
Mm-hmm.
And just kind of go creek walking because that water's so cool coming up from the springs. Yeah. Do you ever go creek walking?
No.
I learned that down in Kansas.
So, creek walking, that's something we can...
That's right. Actually, you could... It's all public land right in here.
Oh, so the stream is public land.
That's right.
It's just when you get on the shore.
The other side, and then you'll start seeing signs where the border is.
There's no trespassing
right,
signs.
Right, yeah, that sort of thing, yeah.
Well, that's an interesting day trip for somebody.
Yeah, creek walking.
Okay, so now we go on to another place, right?
Yeah, we'll drive back to where we started from.
Okay.
Boy, Joe sure gave us a great tour of Honey Creek area. We could get a feel for what Kate Shelley saw and did on her farm, even from the public land owned by the Army Corps of Engineers. It's not a site with well-marked trails, but he gave us a pretty good idea of what you could see. Now he's going to take us to his land, which is a lot more hilly.
Impression of being up here.
Oh, it's amazing. It almost doesn't feel like Iowa.
Some people say it kind of reminds them of being in the mountains.
I grew up over near Dubuque,
uh-huh.
So it kind of reminds
oh,
me
yeah.
of
I think so,
that
yeah.
area. Because we had a lot of woods. And
yeah.
Also left by the glacier?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Now you're basically at the prairie level now. See, it was all cut down here. Well, like if you're on Highway 30 by Boone,
mm-hmm.
you'd be about the same elevation right now.
Okay.
Oh, so all of that is way in the valley.
That's right.
Honey Creek and everything.
That's all down in the big valley.
And even the railroad that was built up, that bridge, that was...
In the valley, too.
In the valley.
Yeah, huh?
Goodbye, Joe. Thank you for taking us to so many different places in the Shelley Valley. This has been a great tour.
Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio 89.1, where we explore the people, stories, and events in central Iowa. Gina McAndrews and Susan Franzen are your hosts, taking a road trip to the sites of the story of Kate Shelley. We've heard an account of the legendary event in Kate's own words and have walked the land she described with Joe Reuter, whose Enchanted Valley Tree Farm sits on part of the old Shelley Farm.
Now we're heading back on Highway 30 to cross the highway bridge on the Des Moines River that will take us to the turnoff to Moingona. You can't miss that one because it's also the turn for Seven Oaks Ski Area.
Is this the turn right here?
Kate Shelley Park. And they've got some picnic tables out in front and a little track. It's a beautiful place for a picnic. And one of my ideas was that this would be a possible tour other people could take.
Yes, it would be real nice.
And here's Pam Schwartz, the director of the Boone County Historical Center, to give us a tour of the Moingona Railway Station. We're standing inside the Moingona Depot, which has been rebuilt. Can you tell us a little about that?
This depot is not the original depot that would have been here when Kate Shelley did her heroic deed. That depot burned down. And so this is a different depot that would have come from near the Beaver area that is of the same time period that replaced it.
There's a picture of the... Is that the actual bridge that she crossed?
This is the Des Moines River Bridge, and this is the bridge that she would have actually crossed that night. And it is often confused with the Kate Shelley High Bridges, but those weren't built until, you know, much, much later after this incident and just named in her honor. But this is a picture of the bridge that she would have crossed that night. Now, we do have this wonderful walking trail out behind the museum, and you can come and walk down. Like I said, it's about a half-hour trek back and forth if you don't spend much time at the end. All that's left of the bridge are the footings. The bridge itself is no longer there. But when you go out there, you can stand at the top of the hill and you can really get a feeling for how high the water was that night. You can really get a feeling for how far she climbed in the soaking wet dress with her lantern that had already gone out. And it puts you into the story because you can really, really get the sense of what it was she was feeling that night.
And this is a nice thing for people to know. One of the things we want to do is to make people aware of what's available for mm-hmm. them to see around in central Iowa. And I've lived here 50 years, and I never heard till I started doing this story that there was a station out here. Mm-hmm. In fact, when the first person who told me is fairly new to town, and she said, I was walking in the woods, and I came across this little museum. And I could hardly believe it. So anybody who comes out here won't be able to come into the station. They can look through the windows, but they can definitely go on the path. Is it clearly yes. marked?
Not yet. The museum itself is, we don't have regular operating hours, but we are always open by appointment if staff allows. Because the Boone County Historical Society runs 4 museums, we only have 1 paid staff member, which is myself, and so we can't be everywhere. But we're more than happy, if you know you're coming, to give us a call and have someone come out and show you through the depot. The grounds themselves are open year-round all the time. If you want to brave the weather, you can come down and kind of look at the depot and walk down the trail, which is located, just east of the depot. And we're working on getting grants and things right now to get better signage out here so that you can easily see where it's at. We're going to have more interpretive text panels outside for those people who don't necessarily care to make an appointment but would like to come enjoy the site. And also working on having a little picnic area and things so people can really come down here and enjoy themselves on a sunny afternoon. So this is our 2-scale, is my understanding, model of the area. Now I'm showing you here, this is the depot we're in. This is where we're standing. This is the trek. Now, like I said, it's about a 15-minute walk. And this is the Des Moines River Bridge that Kate Shelley would have had to crawl across that night. And then if you come around here, this creek is right where the Honey Creek Bridge would have been. Now, she lived here up the hill. So she would have that night heard the bridge, come down, yelled to the men that she was going for help, come back to a different little area, crawled back up to the tracks, gone all the way up to the depot, come all the way back. They estimate her entire journey that night was probably close to 2 to 2.5 hours. And that includes getting to the depot, telling them, coming back out with the men. Because that's really the extraordinary thing, is that once she reached the depot, that wasn't the end. She came back on that pusher engine with the other men to show them where the men who were drowning were. And when they got there, like Suzanne might have told you this, but when they got there, they couldn't get to the men from that side of the bridge. They had to go a different route. So having the knowledge of the area, she was able to guide them to a different place to take them to get back to the other side of the bridge to save the men. So she just had quite an ordeal that night. She just kept going and going and going. So it's a really nice diorama because you can really get a better feel for the layout of the land and exactly her exact path.
Yes, and where is the Shelley land?
This would have been the Shelley land here.
So it's pretty hilly.
Yes, yep. Hard scrabble. It wasn't someplace you're gonna plant corn and things like that. But they did have a small farm, sheep and things like that.
And it was bounded on one side by the Des Moines River and the other side by Honey Creek. Is that right?
Yep. Kind of sat in between the two. And the house was surrounded by the railroad. When you live on the railroad, you know when the trains come by and you know what the different whistles mean and all that. And being raised as a railroad child, her father having worked on the railroad, I think it was kind of ingrained in her to know how dire things could have become that night had that passenger train come through. She just had a really good understanding of the railroad, and that's something she continued the rest of her life. This is not the only accident Kate Shelley encountered and helped with. Of course, there was one much later where she helped the men until, on a train wreck until the, more help could get there. And she was just sort of a railroad heroine her whole life. It didn't just stop with that night. She really did follow in her father's footsteps in having that sort of passion and accountability to the railroad and its men.
Why don't we go for a walk and see where Kate Shelley went?
Good idea.
The nice things about coming so early is that there are lots of birds.
This is the best time to hear all those warblers.
They got a nice little
educational display about the important dates and the legend and life of Kate Shelley.
Right, right. There's some photographs. Kate Shelley was actually in her later life the station master at the Moingona Station. This was after the big bridge that was built up by Boone. And then Moingona eventually, trains didn't come here very much. Now, there's a picture of the bridge. It's a big bridge. Nothing like the one up at Boone.
For its day, it sure was a good size.
There's a picture of her house, and that must be where we stood looking at the creek. And it's, now this says that she was born on September 25th, 1865, but one of the things I learned from Misty McNally, who went to Ireland, where she was born, is that she was christened a couple years earlier than that. So she wasn't quite as young as people said she was. She wasn't 16, she was 18. But in any case, it would hardly matter. I can't imagine very many people of any age being able to do what she did. And, of course, part of it was, since her father had died several years before, and her brother had died the year before this event, and he had died in the Des Moines River because he drowned, he couldn't swim. She was really taking care of the family. And you do, as you look at the water around here, you wonder, what happened? Did he wade in the creek and get down to a place where he got into a hole over his head? What happened? So, here's the trail.
This would be quite a walk in the dark.
Yes, although I guess we haven't gotten to the steep part yet. It's pretty flat up here. It looks like a lot of people walk it now. It's well maintained. I mean, it's just a dirt path, but it's still almost wide enough for both of us.
Blood roots out.
Yes. And do you call this Sweet William or Phlox William?
Either one, yeah.
And this?
Solomon seal.
Solomon seal, yeah.
Nettles. Gooseberries.
Oh, well, now there's a steep drop off over here. So then it would really have looked very different when she came up the hill. Because she would have come on the tracks. She crawled over on the tracks, she would have run up the tracks. But there's a drop-off on both sides here. It's hard to imagine building up this much of a ridge.
How to work.
Looks like there are other little paths to go off on. It'd be a lovely walk.
Yes, it would. Well,
I should say, it is a lovely walk.
There you go.
There are lots of nettles and gooseberries. That doesn't mean they were there 100 years ago. And certainly not on the railroad tracks.
There's some poison ivy.
So a warning to people who take a walk. Not a lot of poison ivy, though.
No.
Here we are at the river, and you can see those big stone piers that the bridge rested on. How wide would you say that was, Gina?
Oh, that's probably a good 100, more than 100 feet anyway.
Oh, I would think so. Dry over here where these pilings are. But how high are they? They're would you say, 20 feet?
Oh, at least. I think they're closer to 40 or 50 feet.
High.
High. I'd hate to have to climb over them in a big storm, though.
Well, of course, she didn't have to do anything to go across the tops, but that would give you some idea of how high the water was, because the water was almost up to the bridge. When the big tree went under the bridge, the branches were sticking through the tide.
Would have been a little scary.
It's scary for me just to think about it.
1981, a fierce storm was raging. The rain just wouldn't stop coming down. We're flooding in the Des Moines River Valley near the railroad station by Mondona Town. Around 11 in the evening, a pusher train went out to search for men looking for washouts along the track. When they passed the Shelley family home, a mighty crash, the Shelleys heard the Honey Creek Bridge had just collapsed. 15-year-old Kate Shelley ran outside into the storm, saw two men trapped down in that river grave. She couldn't rescue them herself, but knew that midnight train would be sooner coming down the tracks this way. 100 years from now, folks will still speak her name. Kate Shelley will always be that girl who saved the train. Kate had to hurry to warn Mondona Station, and that old trestle bridge was the only way. Through the darkness and the storm, she crawled on her hands and knees across that tiny catwalk in the pouring rain. Way across the river, a tree crashed into the trestle. Kate was sure that shaky bridge would fall apart. Just at the last moment, that tree slipped through the pier's knees, the fear of death beating in her heart. When Kate reached the other side, she ran to Mondona Station, warning them that the bridge had just washed out.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. Your hosts for today have been Gina McAndrews and Susan Franzi, taking you on a road trip with us to Honey Creek and Mondona, retracing the footsteps of the legendary Kate Shelley.
We spoke with Misty McNally, Joseph Reuter, owner of Enchanted Valley Tree Farm, Charles Irwin, Pam Schwartz, executive director of the Boone County Historical Center. You can find more information about the Boone County Historical Center at www.boonecountyhistory.org or call 515-432-1907. Local Talk is engineered by Rick Morrison. Music you heard today included Lady Keith's Lament by Granine Hambly and William Jackson from their CD Music from Ireland and Scotland, The Ballad of Kate Shelley, and our theme song Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD The Ballad of Kate Shelley.
You can listen to this show and all of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org, where you'll find an archive for all of the Local Talk shows we've produced since we went on air in 2012.
If you enjoyed this show, tell your friends. Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a radio show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878. Or contact us through our website, khoifm.org.
Your participation as audience is making KHOI possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.
public is invited to the Learn with the League program, Community-Based Corrections, creating safer communities by helping individuals find their way to crime desistance. Presented by Amanda Milligan, District Director for the 2nd Judicial District Department of Correctional Services. This presentation will provide information on the role of probation, parole, and work release in assisting individuals on their path towards desistance from criminal activity. Join the League of Women Voters on March 17th at 7 p.m. at the Ames Public Library PEO Room or live on the League of Women Voters Ames and Story County Facebook page. This message, a public service of the League of Women Voters, the Ames Public Library, and KHOI Community Radio.
This March, the Margaret Sloss Center for Women and Gender Equity, the College of Design, and KHOI Community Radio are bringing you Articulations, an interview series with local women and non-binary artists. Focus on women and non-binary artists' expertise in art making has historically been lacking, with exhibitions typically focusing on what artists represent in their work more than how they do it or the levels of skill and technical command they achieve in the process. We want to move beyond that by asking about the process, experience, meaning, and impact of the art discussed in these interviews. My name is Nancy Gebhardt, and I'll be your host. We are thrilled to introduce you to 4 amazing artists in our community, from whom you'll hear every Monday at 4 p.m. Be sure to tune in for Articulations.
For the Daily Yonder and Public News Service, this is the news from rural America. When the pandemic hit, rural hospitals already on the brink of closing were spared by an infusion of government money. The funding was a buffer, but Medicare reimbursements will likely be reduced this summer, according to Michael Topchick with Chartis Center for Rural Health.
A decrease in reimbursement from Medicare across the board would be catastrophic to rural hospitals.
Topchick says significant hospital closures may be avoided this year, but nursing shortages increase the risk for 2023. Rural hospital budgets feel the pinch when forced to hire traveling nurses who make as much as $120 an hour.
Right now, the free market is making a run on nursing. Nurses are not a commodity, but they are being commoditized.
Topchick's group reports that 130 rural hospitals have closed since 2010. Maine made history as hosting the most expensive ballot measure ever at $71 million, a campaign that combines rural politics, the green transition, and the influence of entrenched oil and gas interests. Xander Brown has more.
The decarbonization effort that would have sent hydropower from Quebec to Massachusetts by way of Maine saw a defeat at the ballot box in November 2021, but has caused an unlikely alliance between environmental advocates and natural gas corporations.
Natural gas companies, which have been expanding further into New England over the past 5-10 years, really sought to benefit from this campaign in that hydropower would lose out.
Maine public health policy researcher Eric Miller says the 50 miles of transmission lines by Central Maine Power promise more renewable energy for the New England energy grid to help reduce fossil fuel reliance. But many Mainers thought it posed too much disruption to outdoor recreation and hunting.
It's really important to engage every stakeholder.
I'm Xander Brown.
Another environmental conflict is playing out near California's Death Valley. For decades, conservationists have requested updates to the 1872 mining law that controls extractions. The Biden administration says a review is now underway. Kayla Brown is with Friends of the Inyo.
In 1872, mining was very different than what it is today. They weren't industrial scale, heavy machinery, large open pit like they are now.
Meanwhile, Mojave Precious Metals wants to drill for gold on tribal ancestral lands and restore some roads to a mostly roadless landscape. Friends of the Inyo opposes the gold mining operation. They cite air pollution, damage to Native American cultural sites, and disruption of deer migration, among many reasons. The daylight savings time holdout states, Hawaii and Arizona, won't notice. The rest of the U.S. faces darker mornings, but more of twilight's last gleaming until November 6th. For the Yonder Report and Public News Service, I'm Roz Brown. For more rural stories, visit dailyyonder.com.